Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. This morning, we will continue with our series, Home for the Holidays, a celebration of the heart with a gift from the soul. My guest this morning is Kelly Barnett. She is an ASID interior designer who specializes in kitchen designs, kitchen makeovers, and she's also a working mom. Kelly is the owner of Kelly Barnett Interior Design in Austin, Houston, and San Antonio, Texas. She is a graduate of the University of Texas in Austin and has lived in Southern California, New Mexico, New Jersey, Texas, and Puerto Rico. Kelly has also traveled and studied abroad in England, France, and Canada. Her design philosophy is to provide her clients with discriminating interior designs unique to their personality, budget, and lifestyle. She is here to talk about her life's journey as a woman, a working mom, the history of kitchen, kitchen designs, kitchen makeovers, and getting your kitchen ready for the holidays. Good morning, Kelly. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Johnny. Thank you so much. I'm doing well.
Great. I'm glad to have you on this morning as we celebrate the holiday, upcoming holiday season. What I'd like to get started is to talk about your life's journey. So, Kelly, please tell us about your childhood life with your family, the community you grew up in, and walk us through all the way to the present moment.
Okay. My parents were married at a very young age. They were 17 and 19. The typical high school cheerleader and high school football star, and my mom had me when she was 17. So I had a very young set of parents.
Mm-hmm.
They had my mom had four kids by the time she was 23, which to me is still absolutely unbelievable.
Wow.
And she had her fifth child at 28.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So I'm the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
I have two beautiful sisters that have a total of seven kids between them and one grandbaby.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got two brothers. One's got three children, and the other one is still single. Of course, he's the baby of the family.
Mm-hmm.
But we moved every 2 years because my dad was an FBI agent for 35 years. And like the military, you'll move every couple of years until they decide on their area of expertise.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that's how we ended up in Austin. And the nice thing about that, though, is that whenever you move, you've got a little built-in set of friends, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I just remember my vivid memories are everyone coming to our house because my mm-hmm. mother cooked everything. We rarely ate out, and we did not have a perfect home. I don't want to give that impression, but we worked very hard
mm-hmm.
at getting along and encouraging each other. And actually, my parents have just celebrated their 50th anniversary. We got to go to the Hotel Del Coronado in San Diego and celebrate with them.
Oh, congratulations.
And, I know. Isn't that exciting?
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be an encouragement to others that it's possible to last that long and still be crazy about each other, which they are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. You know, I'm still stuck on the fact that, you know, I would be afraid to date any of you guys because on the fear that your dad will be doing, you know, a complete background check on me.
He told several of our prospective partners no, and that was the end of it. So, but that's very good because daddies know those things. And,
oh, really? No,
yeah,
did he really?
I
mean, pull up
yes,
something on someone?
I don't know that he found anything, but I think daddies can see through the heart. And
uh-huh.
they can detect where
no,
where
I understand that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's what he did.
That's funny though, because I mean nowadays I watch, you know, those FBI movies on TV, you know, where they have so many different specialization.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think a guy would be intimidated, you know.
I think they were, and that was probably a very good protective covering for us. So I'm very grateful for his insight and for his experience. Yes, that's a good observation, Johnny. Very good.
No, it's just, you know, it's funny in a way, and but it's interesting. So I have to show up and say, yes, sir, I'm actually studying criminology. Something like that, you know. But anyway, let's carry on. I mean, that sounds like you have a wonderful, growing up with the rest of the family. And are you guys very close with the
very
rest
close.
Of the siblings?
Yes, very close. In fact, everybody comes to our house for Thanksgiving and Christmas,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes
mm-hmm.
I'll even decorate for Christmas on Halloween to have everything ready. So I've got some good tips, but it is literally a house full, 20 to 25. And then if we can, we'll pull in some soldiers that are not
mm-hmm.
Able to go home. We live close to the Fort Sam Army
oh,
base
okay.
here in San Antonio. So,
yeah.
Yes, and I'm still very close. We are close in age. Some of us as close as 14 to 16 months apart. And
yeah.
so physically close and in every other way, yes, wonderfully close.
How this is, brings us to the next question. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have a very impressive portfolio, and in your portfolio, you mentioned the fact that motherhood has been everything you dreamt about.
Mm-hmm.
Please tell us about that, and how has that being like the firstborn sort of kind of play into it?
I've heard people say that the firstborn is a guinea pig, although I never felt that way. There are definitely some leadership advantages to
mm-hmm.
being the firstborn, and I'm sure I manipulated those to the nth degree.
Uh-huh.
But my mom was really my inspiration and set my expectations for motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
My mother is beautiful and of Mexican heritage, and I was always so jealous of her little frame. I loved her clothes. I loved the way she smelled and her perfume and the way she cooked.
Mm-hmm.
But I was 10 when my youngest brother was born, so I got to be second mom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I just always wanted to be a mother, but I married very late in life, and
mm-hmm.
I suffered several years of infertility.
Mm-hmm.
And the drugs, the surgery I had to have, and the adoption papers were all filled out, and we were ready to go, and then found out that we were going to be blessed with a child
mm-hmm.
who is now 14, but,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people will say, oh, those teenage years, but you know what, that child is a joy to watch grow up, and I just wanted the honor of being able to bring a living soul into the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To nurture, to love, and then one day I'll have to send him on his way to make a difference in the world. I'm not looking forward to that day. But my mother told me last week after having our son for a week in her company
mm-hmm.
that he was helpful without being asked, that he was kind to others.
Mm-hmm.
He enjoys having coffee in the morning with his grandparents and just sits and talks to them for hours.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so to me, that makes mothering rewarding, especially to hear that kind of compliment from my mother, who was actually in tears as she was telling me this.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I could ask for any more.
Right. I understand. Well, that's the connection that obviously that you guys have built as a bond between you and your son, and obviously your son with his grandmother,
mm-hmm.
that makes it something very, very unique. Now, did you draw a lot of your mothering skills from your mom?
You know, I really did. I always remembered that she did not have teenage years, and
mm-hmm.
Because she was a mother so early. And when I look at 23-year-olds today
mm-hmm.
and think that was my mom with four little ones behind
mm-hmm.
her,
mm-hmm.
It makes me even more appreciate what she went through. It was hard, and so, yes, I admire mothers of multiples. We were only given one,
mm-hmm.
but as I observe moms with more than one child, and especially single moms who have to do so much on their own and be all things
mm-hmm.
for those children, I stand back in amazement at what they're able to do. My mom cooked everything from scratch. She sewed
mm-hmm,
for us.
Mm-hmm.
She cleaned. She chauffeured, just like all moms do. So from her, I learned selflessness. I learned dedication and unconditional love that is just somehow born in the heart of moms.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I agree. You know, my mom cooked everything from scratch also. And then when you look back and you realize, like, wow, they would really immense into what they were doing. But the most important thing I think you would realize, too, when you look back, she enjoyed what she was doing.
Yes.
You know, it's not something that they had to do. They just love doing it. Every day they're excited about, you know, doing, being a mother, basically, or,
yeah,
or being, you know, in charge of the house, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so that's the interesting part about what I have learned over the years. And even in writing my book, it was a humbling experience when I look back and start looking at the things that my mom did. And, you know, it's like, wow, she assumed the role, whether it's by design or, well, it fell on my lap here. She did it. You know, with a passion, versus, you know, just going through the motion, which I thought was very, very interesting. Now, how did that, you know, how does that goes with you in terms of managing, you know, being able to balance a successful career in this case, and then being a mother at the same time? I know you only have one child, but it's, but it's fairly demanding also, you know, in your career, in your successful career, as well as, you know, being a mother. How did you balance that?
I've heard from mothers of multiples that it's almost harder to have one because you can't say, go play with so-and-so. You become the playmate, the entertainer, and I know that they need to learn to entertain themselves. But you really end up having to wear a whole lot of hats as well. So, but I remember at one point making a conscious decision that I might never be published in a magazine, that I might never be famous in the world of interior design, but it was okay with me because I wanted to be a mother so badly, and I thought, you know, my reward is just going to have to come from something else. And so in making that decision, and I'm saying that because of the word successful, it's a very interesting word, and it can take on a lot of different definitions. So when our son was little, until he went to school, I only took a couple of jobs a year and until he was in school full time. So for those 6 years, I could not. I know a lot of people can, but for me it was too much stress and it kind of robbed me of the joy of mothering. I could not be a full-time mother and full-time work. I just couldn't do it. I know other people can. And I'm always standing in amazement of that. But he just went to our little church. They had a Mother's Day Out program one or two mornings a week. And for those, it happened to be very close to the Decorative Center in Houston. So literally I would, you know, run and take care of him and then, you know, go back to my meetings. But I just took on a couple of jobs for those 6 years. And we just made the choice, my husband and I, to forego major purchases. We drove old cars. We lived in a small house. It was just the decision that we made as a family to not miss out on anything that was happening with that little guy for until he was in school full time. And now it's a different story.
Right.
And of course, he's in school full time. And but I still do carpool 2 days a week. I make his lunch every day, and I basically turn into a pumpkin. Like Cinderella at 3:30, and I put on my apron, and it's mom time. But from 7 in the morning, yes, until he's out of school, it's work, work, work. And it's nice to have to be able to look back and see what I didn't miss and then now enjoy this concentrated time to work. So I think it's all about choices, don't you?
Oh, yes, very much so. And what people don't realize also is during that certain age that you really can make a very positive impression on the child. And I've mentioned this before in my show, you cannot outsource motherly love.
No, that's true.
Having said that, that doesn't mean that, you know, different people, different families go through different challenges in life. That doesn't mean that, that you know, you have to stay at home and all that kind of stuff all the time. No, it's got nothing to do with that. I think there's a wonderful balancing act between quality and quantity, and then and the fact that yes, it's true that you may have all the quantity of time with the child, but then if you don't have any quality built in into it, it's wasted.
Sure.
It's totally wasted. And then at the same time, it comes back to the idea again, you know. Quality that counts. I don't have to be with my child 20 hours a day, but the beautiful 4 hours that we have together, that makes up for everything else, and it's very, very true. But guess who controls that? you as a parent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You see? So when it's all said and done, it comes back to you on what you design. And you mentioned something just now about success. How do you measure success?
Mm-hmm.
Well, collectively, I think it's a complete package. It's what you have as a family, and also is reflective of the person that you are responsible for in bringing up as a parent,
mm-hmm.
and that measures success.
Very
because
good.
That's a reflection of you,
mm-hmm.
and it's not outsourced to someone else.
No.
And so that's the difference. What inspired you to be an interior designer?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it was the fact that my poor parents were stuck with a bad decorator. And
mm-hmm.
even
mm-hmm.
at 13, I remember watching this gentleman come to our house. Okay,
mm-hmm.
keep in mind we've got 5 kids and
mm-hmm.
pets and, you know, eating and food everywhere, shoes
mm-hmm.
everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
This poor gentleman specified for my parents a white shag-covered couch with
mm-hmm.
the long hairs, which was popular at that time,
mm-hmm.
and this white Parsons table with edges so sharp you could have performed surgery on them.
Mm-hmm.
Very pointy edges where when you've got little, I can't tell you how many stitches that table caused. And then a glass top table that was just at the perfect height where little heads were constantly bumping into it. And
right.
I remember sitting back and watching thinking, none of this stuff is practical.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the couch was soiled with, you know, in a month. And
yeah.
I just remember that was my first thing, was observing the things that were wrong. But then I also had normal tendencies to constantly rearrange my room. I remember organizing the laundry, putting labels on everything, and then just being totally fascinated with color.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't know that you could make a living doing that. I didn't know that there was a career of such a thing. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's the combination of what I saw that was wrong and what I saw that was a possibility,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and something that I just absolutely enjoyed doing.
I see. We have a caller here, area code 409.
Mm-hmm.
Would you, caller, area code 409, would you like to say something? Do you have a question for us?
I do, but it's area code 406.
406, I'm sorry.
Hi, this is Judy Wright calling from Missoula, Montana. I enjoy your show. I always do.
Hi, Judy. How are you?
I am good. Want to agree with everything that you said, and then I want to ask a question. We would really like to redo our kitchen. We're ready to remodel it. The kids are grown and gone. But how do you keep from, well, we might as well as? Because if we redo the cupboards, then you think, well, we might as well put a new floor in. And then you think, well, if we're going to put a new floor in, we might as well replace the refrigerator and the dishwasher. And, well, we might as well as. And pretty soon, the $3,500 that we were going to spend is
$35,000. Well, Kelly, you want to answer that?
Sure, but it good morning to you as well. Thank you for calling. It depends also on, there's a couple things to consider. How long you're going to be in the home. Is this a place that
Forever and ever.
Okay, that's important because you want to get your money's worth out of it, but you also need to think of unexpected things like the possibility of resale. Where if you just went in and did a couple of things and you did spend your $3,500, you may perfectly enjoy that. But then on the flip side of it, you may get to looking around going, oh, I wish we would have done this, that, and the other. So what I would do would be to establish a budget first and foremost. If you really do want to spend the $3,500, then you would need to do your research and find out what can I get for that $3,500 and am I going to be happy with those changes? Whereas, say if you spent 10 or 15 and you got an absolutely spectacular redo that would last you another 20 years, that may be your deciding factor. Because once you do one thing, even something simple as repainting, suddenly everything looks out of date and it looks dirty and those changes start to really mushroom. So I would think the most important thing after you've decided that you do want to stay in the home permanently would be to establish a budget. Does that help?
Well, it does. It does. And it's always interesting because my budget and my husband's budget are never as close together as they should be.
Well, let me answer this, too. Kelly, I mean, you know, this brings up a very interesting situation. We talk about budget. Now, what is a typical budget do you recommend for someone who is contemplating for a kitchen makeover? Because this is something, like you say, Judy was thinking about, you know, I'm going to be living here for, you know, ever and ever. And
yes.
And we all know that in the design business, that the I guess apart from the bathroom, the master bath that is, the kitchen is probably the next most important thing on the list. So how do we actually address that?
Mm-hmm. Judy, that's a difficult question, but it's not impossible. I think you need to take inventory of what you currently have that is workable, some things that you can repurpose, things that you can keep. And then you need to make a list starting with the floor. That makes the most sense to me. Start with the floor. Does the floor need to be replaced? What do I need to do on the walls? What do I need to do on the ceiling? Work your way up. And then you get into your cabinets. Can they be refaced or do I need new cabinets? What about my countertops? Then you would get into your plumbing fixtures, appliance package, and your lighting. So those are your big ticket items. If I were to come up with a number and say what would be the perhaps the modest end mm-hmm. of it, I would be looking at probably about $10,000 if you were to do a little bit in each one of those areas and then work your way up from there. But don't be discouraged. The guys often have sticker shock. They don't shop like we do for things. They have no idea that the refrigerators are $2,000 and that a nice stove starts at $2,000 and works up. And I understand that because they're not around it as much. But the more homework you do on the front end to find out what can be repurposed and then what needs to be purchased new will really help you. And my goodness, what did we do before we had the Internet? This was so difficult, you know, running around from store to store to store, but now you can do a whole lot online
mm-hmm.
if you have yeah. that available to you.
And hey, Judy, I have another thing also. I mean, do you cook in the kitchen? Because that's the other flip side yeah. of it also, because a lot of times, you know, we have this wonderful fancy kitchen mm-hmm. and it's not being used, so...
we do, but we also, this is the central place where all of the adult children and their children come for
right.
the holidays. So
right.
even when I'm just heating up leftovers or my husband's warming up a can of soup, yeah, I mean, we're there, but then there are certain times of the year where we put on, like to entertain and like to do all sorts of things. So it's pretty multi-purpose and hasn't been redone for quite a while, and so it's our turn. It's
yes.
our turn.
Yeah, that's what happens. You outgrow it. The only thing I would encourage your listeners to, and Johnny, is that HGTV is not real. So
Bye.
When you're watching the TV shows, very seldom will they give you any indication of actual pricing, and so I'm running into a lot of clients with unrealistic expectations, the sweetest people you can imagine. But if that's your only source for information, you're going to be very disappointed. So when I throw that number out, you know, 10 to 15, and of course, yes, it does depend on whether you entertain, how you cook. If you just warm up leftovers, that's one thing. You need a microwave. However, if you're really doing elaborate cooking and holiday cooking, then yes, that price is going to shoot way up from there. So I think that's the first hump to get over, is to establish that budget based on realistic numbers that you garner either from working with an interior designer or going out and doing the homework yourself.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. It's always fun to listen to your radio show.
Hey, Judy, one last thought.
Okay.
I just thought about this, what my mom used to tell me a long time ago. And, I mean, you know, this is for the fun of it. The way to a man's heart is through his stomach, so cook up a storm and convince him that this is why we need to spend this money to redo
yes.
the kitchen.
Yeah. Well, he's the one that's kind of pushing for it, but I know that once we get started, it will
uh-huh.
just continue to be, we might as well as,
right.
why don't
right.
we? And, here we go, and as long as we're at Home Depot, let's go ahead and pick this up. And yeah,
well, that's
very,
true,
very,
that's very,
very quick.
True. That's very, very true. One last thing, Kelly, this is for you also. If you know, if you have to, just say, for example, in Judy's situation, you know, you have X amount of dollars, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What if we just do one thing in the kitchen that sort of like really make a big impact?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would it be? Appliances, floor, countertop?
The least expensive thing you could do would be a fresh coat of paint. And
okay.
Then if we get, that's just for appearance, that's just for
mm-hmm,
aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get into function, the newer appliances are so much better, so
mm-hmm,
much improved
mm-hmm.
with the energy-saving features, and the possibilities are endless. That's where I would put my money if I had to put it into one thing. It would be more
return
function.
On investment, yeah.
Yes, it would be more functional over the aesthetics. You can always work on the aesthetics later, but you really need the function to work.
Well, actually, you're right, because then the money savings that you get from that, then you can take care of the aesthetics.
Absolutely. And some things you can do yourself. You can repaint. There are a lot of people that can retile,
mm-hmm.
redo countertops. But the new dishwashers, the new refrigerators, some of which use I can't even remember now. I think it's a seventh of the electricity that the older refrigerators used to use. It's absolutely incredible, the strides that have been made in the appliance end.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
that's, yeah, you're right. That's where I would put my investment. Good advice, Johnny.
Well, can I ask one last question? Because the last time we did this, the last time we actually did the aesthetics, we stepped over dollars to save pennies.
Oh,
and
wow. Uh-huh.
Hired someone who was a professional painter but must not have known what he did, and he must not have sanded. We have interior wooden cupboards that are very plain and wonderful. I love them. But he must have put some sort of a latex paint over an oil base finish. And it lasted for maybe 4 years or something,
mm-hmm.
and then just gradually it started peeling off.
Mm-hmm.
So we would, whoever repaints them, if we could save those cupboards, I'd love it. But would they have to each be stripped down?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, they would. Mm-hmm. But there are but that's not as labor intensive as it used to be. So if you haven't done a kitchen in 20, 25 years, you're going to be pleasantly surprised at your options. So don't let that discourage you or keep you from doing something wonderful.
Okay. Because I'd like to keep cupboards if we could.
Sure. That's a major investment, absolutely. If they're a good height for you and they're in good condition, yes, that's going to be a major savings in the kitchen. That's one of your big-ticket items.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. This has been very informative.
Well,
thanks,
Judy, for calling, and I hope you'll stay on and listen to the rest of the conversation and any other questions that may have and so forth. So, but great. Kelly, wonderful insights on that, and I'm glad we talked about the, you know, the budget a little bit, because that's one of the questions that obviously I wanted to bring up and talk about how we can redo the kitchen from a
mm-hmm.
kitchen perspective. Now, this whole conversation obviously brought us to the kitchen. So I want to kind of backtrack a little bit here. Tell us a little bit about the history of kitchens from the old days to the present day modern kitchen, you know, sort of a quick history lesson, so to speak, for the rest of us who kind of wanting to find out about how this kitchen evolved over the years and centuries, actually.
That's a great question. I don't know how far back we want to go, but I'll go back to ancient Greece and the Romans. I guess that'll satisfy our need for a history lesson, which is good. But actually, up until like the 18th century, food was still cooked over an open fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only with technical advances in heating food in the 18th and 19th centuries that we start seeing changes evolve
mm-hmm.
in the architecture of the kitchen. But before you had modern pipes and water being brought in and gas supplies, this was the way it was for so very long. If you go back to antiquity with the Grecians and the Romans, you still have like an atrium-type room or an open patio that served as the kitchen. Keep in mind that you had the commoners and then you had the more wealthy, and they always had kitchens that were separate rooms, and
mm-hmm.
that carried through future history as well. But then you get to the Middle Ages, and you basically had the longhouses is what they were called, and they had an open fire at the highest point of the building, of course, so all the fumes and the soot and the smoke could be released up through the ceiling. But you're still having single-room buildings. And then the kitchen remained largely unaffected for a long time, even through the Middle Ages. And then we get to colonial American kitchens, and the pioneers were still cooking over a little fireplace in the corner of a cabin. And the kitchen became a separate room only much later, except for some places in the South where you would have the servants that would be cooking in a totally separate area. But then we get to more modern times with the Industrial Revolution and the, it's actually interesting, I didn't realize that the first electrical stove was introduced in 1893. Did you know that?
No, not at all.
I mean, that seems so early, but it was not until the 1930s that that technology was stable enough and
right.
it really began to take off. So not until the second half of the 19th century were changes really being made, and you started seeing people put their little pots and their kitchenware. They were stored on open shelves, but they didn't want them to be filthy, so they would hide them behind very simple curtains.
Mm-hmm.
And then the gas pipes were laid in the 19th century, so then you start seeing the gas stoves come into place, and they replaced the older coal fire stoves.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was fascinating, too, to learn or remember from my history as well that Pogan Pohl, who is still making beautiful cabinets today, in 1892 started establishing standards of measurement, which is what we see today with our different kitchen styles and the layout, the standardization of cabinet sizes and clearances and all the nuts and bolts that we as designers and many lay people use to design their kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
And then not even till, I think it was in the 1940s, did you start seeing in the United States kitchens equipped with small electrified appliances. And then in the 1980s, we jump into the open kitchen concept because they really mastered the exhaust system. But up until then, you had to be careful where you placed anything that would generate that much heat and smoke.
Right, right.
So, and then that brings us to today with our wonderful kitchen options. They're almost endless. But that's is that a fair enough? I jumped like a lot of years in a very short amount of time.
No, I think that's wonderful. And one of the things that people don't realize is because the kitchen started out outside the house because that's where, you know, people were using wood burning and, you know, stuff and methods of cooking. And they didn't want it to be attached to the main house because it would, that's where the fire starts.
Absolutely.
And it burns down the whole house.
Right.
And people don't realize that through the process of, I guess, refining, and then you get to the process of making a kitchen, in bringing it into the house, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, then back then, you know, you were cooking outside, and then you were serving all the dishes, all the food in the main dining room, and then eventually, like what Judy had mentioned just now, our caller earlier, well, you know, for the holidays, the kitchen is the hub where everybody congregate, chit-chat, and everything else in a very casual setting versus like, okay, you know, it's time to sit down and eat, so to speak. And so now the kitchen to me has become that wonderful, hub and rightfully known as the heart and soul of every home because you're able to just sit back and relax and just sit down and just have wonderful conversations and it builds relationship, friendships and whatnot. And so it has evolved from that perspective, don't you think?
Oh, it has, absolutely. In fact, I can still go to my grandmother's kitchen, and I know this might sound strange, but I'll smell the tile that she had on her kitchen countertop, and I can smell where she made tortillas. And that just, I can't tell you how that warms my heart. I make my own homemade flour tortillas for my son, and I so enjoy that process. I loved reading your book about the kitchen, the conversations that took place, the living that takes place.
Right.
In that one magical room. Absolutely, yes. You're absolutely right.
And it's not, it wasn't designed that way initially, obviously, because
no.
That's where, you know, it was just more for cooking, a place to
purely,
cook. And then,
yes,
and
purely functional. And then that room also doubled. The heat that was generated kept the people
mm-hmm.
warm. I mean, a lot of them slept
right.
in the same room, but they had to have a way to exhaust the fumes and the smoke, especially from the coal, my goodness, but yes, and from the fire too. But yes,
right.
it served many purposes, and then gradually it evolved into that separate room. And I know there was a period there, because I remember the low-hanging cabinets, I would say 60s, 70s, where
mm-hmm.
the mom felt like she was off by herself
and
couldn't really be a part of the living that was taking place elsewhere. And, of course, those have all come down, and now we have this open, wonderful open concept where
mm-hmm.
a whole lot more living takes place in that space. And I'm glad for that, aren't you?
Oh, yes, very much so. Generations have changed too, because when you're talking about maybe some 25, maybe even longer than that, I would say it's certainly not 25, certainly about 50 years ago and beyond, prior to that, that's the woman's domain.
Mm-hmm.
No one goes in there. And now the dynamics have changed. You know, we guys cook, children want to get involved with cooking. Cooking is hip again. So now, all of a sudden, the kitchen, in all actuality, doubles as the family room.
Oh, it does. Yes, it does. And the more we can get those kids in there doing their homework
mm-hmm.
instead
mm-hmm.
of off in their little rooms with a computer, and the more we can get them hands-on, standing on their little stools, helping
right.
in that kitchen, yes. You're not only creating memories, you're just doing so much more.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, how many types of kitchen styles are there today?
There are 5 basic styles and then a variation on a theme of any of those.
Mm-hmm.
But the 5 basic ones are your straight run, where everything takes place on one wall.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have a galley kitchen, where you've
mm-hmm.
got this same setup, but it's on 2 walls, and then you've
mm-hmm.
got traffic going through. Then there's the L shape,
mm-hmm.
or some call the peninsula, and then a U-shape, and then a box,
mm-hmm.
some of which can have islands, freestanding islands, or attached islands. But those are your 5 basic types of kitchen styles.
Which is the most common one?
Oh, my goodness. I would say that the L-shape is more common, but a lot of people are wanting to go more towards the U-shape for the additional storage.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
then if that U is big enough, it can incorporate either an eat-in kitchen, a serving bar, and or an island.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
And in a typical budget for new construction these days, for housing construction that is, what is the typical cost percentage allocated for just a kitchen?
Okay, this we have to think about. It can be tricky, but let me see if
mm-hmm.
I can help you. Most builders will give what they call an allowance or an estimate. And
mm-hmm.
I appreciate that this is a difficult thing to do, because the variables are so wide depending on what grade of product you want to put into that kitchen. But if we were just to throw out some numbers, I would start with your base. Say you have a 12 by 20 foot space, that's 240 square feet.
Right.
I would multiply that by about $125 a square foot, and that would give you a working $30,000 budget for your kitchen.
Okay.
If you wanted a truly gourmet kitchen with all the bells and whistles as far as appliances and lighting and countertops, throw in another $50 and you're looking at about an $80,000 kitchen.
Wow.
So you've got that wide range, and so
right.
if you're happy and a laminate countertop works for you with a tile backsplash and a simple floor, then you know you're more on the $30,000
uh-huh.
dollar range. But just remember that basically in that budget, 30% of that is for labor costs. 30% of that is for the materials that go into that space.
Right.
Another 30% is mechanical systems like your electrical and your plumbing, and then 10% is what we consider overage or contingency costs.
Okay. That's interesting. That's good enough to kind of give people an idea. And of course, ultimately, you know, it's up to them on how much money do they want to put in it in terms of the functionality and everything else, like you say, to get it up to the level that they, if they use it all the time and everything else.
Right.
Now, in designing kitchens and everything else, what is the number one factor that influences the design of the kitchen? If there's such a thing, you know, in terms of the look or the functionality,
sure.
How would someone, you know, build around, I guess,
sure.
the first thing that they put down?
Okay, now that's a fantastic question. Well, it's kind of drummed into our heads when we're in interior design school, and our little phrase that we just chant over and over is that form follows function. Function has to be your primary goal in the kitchen. Excuse me. If it's beautiful and it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. So to me, functionality is the most important. And then the second place would be a tie between the budget and the client preferences.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I think that's why being a mom and being a cook has helped me to be a better designer, because I'm constantly thinking about, as your listeners will as well, how they are working in that space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that would the function would be the most important. That would be my number one factor.
How much input do your client put in terms of designing their kitchen? A lot, or is, but many times when you were doing stuff, would they just turn everything over to you?
I wish they did. No, I'm kidding. Some have. A few have just said, you know what I like, here's my budget, call me when it's done. Those are few and far between in the career of an interior designer. But actually, if you think about it, I'm not putting a, you know, I'm not making a name for myself on their kitchen. The client's going to be living in it, working in it, cooking in it, making memories in it. So I try and elicit as much information as I can from my clients by asking pages of questions. And I know it's tedious, but I have to know how they cook, what they cook, the size of the family, how they entertain. I mean, it just goes on and on. But if your clients, I mean, if your listeners were to be the biggest help to an interior designer, what they could do would be to take inventory, actually take pictures of everything they have after they declutter, take pictures of everything they have in their kitchen, even down to the 9x13 pans and everything they use, measure everything, and then decide where they want it. You want it to be stored where you use it. And that is so helpful to an interior designer. But also just observe how you cook on a day-to-day basis, and observe how you cook and entertain when you're having guests for holidays, and make either a mental note, or even better, write it down. What works and what doesn't work? And those are the kind of things that you would want to address with an interior designer, or else you could, you know, try and figure that out for yourself as well.
Okay. Well, the holiday is just around the corner, and the kitchen, of course, as mentioned before, is going to be the most important room in the house. Can you give our listeners a quick, breakdown on maybe perhaps different projects that they can work with in terms of decorating the kitchen without breaking the bank?
Okay. Now, that's a great question. I'm going to have fun with that, because I actually do my own home, and I've decorated plenty of other people's homes for the holidays. And so I'm hoping that this will be very helpful for your listeners. The first thing I would do would absolutely be to declutter, get all the stuff off the top of the cabinets and all the stuff off the top of the counters that you don't use on a day-to-day basis. It really needs to be streamlined. As you're thinking about putting things into the kitchen, then, for decorative purposes, be sure not to interrupt your work areas by putting stuff that shortens the depth of the counter, the prep area, what have you. And hang things on the walls, the door pulls, the drawer pulls, the doorknobs, and light fixtures, just to get it up and out of the way. There's still plenty of clever ways that you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the suggestions I would give would overlap in the sense that some of them will be less expensive and then some of them will be more expensive. But do you want me to kind of just go by maybe price?
For example, just to kind of basically maybe use existing things. Let's start out with things that
okay.
they can use that they have in the
okay.
Existing in the house and in the kitchen.
Okay. The first piece of advice that I would give is, now it's too late for this year, but you can go this year and buy stuff after season. And that's what I do is I wait until the season's over. I buy a bunch of new stuff for the next year. I pack it away, and then I have this lovely surprise. So that would be one of your most economical ways to do things. But in rearranging existing items or repurposing or reusing, give yourself the freedom to put things in different places. Don't put them in the same place each year. And don't feel that you have to use everything that you have. But when I'm saying repurpose, think of things like perhaps you've got a pretty basket that you've got a lot of magazines in right now. We'll take the magazines out and use that basket for perhaps wood storage or pine cones or other seasonal decorations. So be observant to what you already have in your house that could quite possibly be used for little or no money spent. And then where do we go from there, Johnny?
That's interesting. Okay. And then for people that have some extra money that maybe, has up to maybe about $350 that they want to spend this year to kind
okay.
of spur things up a little bit, what can they do with it?
Okay. So much of the current decorative materials that are out there are going back to very organic, natural themes. And so, you know what's so wonderful about what's available now is that you can use fresh fruits, you can use gourds, pumpkins, pomegranates are absolutely gorgeous, vegetables for your decor, unshelled nuts are absolutely wonderful,
mm-hmm.
inexpensive ways, and then with candles, it's like you can never have enough. I mean, the votives, they can be put in wine glasses. There's just a lot of ways to display. But I love the fact that you can take natural materials and that you can blend and combine the color and the textures and the sizes and the shapes. It doesn't all have to match. It doesn't all have to be the same color.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I take a plastic bag with me when I walk my dog in the morning, and I literally, I hope I don't scare my neighbors, but I pick up, I ask them for permission first, of course, but I pick up acorns, pine cones,
mm-hmm.
eucalyptus leaves, and I'll hot glue them to a wreath, and they
mm-hmm.
make
mm-hmm.
the most beautiful centerpieces and wall hangings. So I think if we give ourselves that freedom and open our eyes, I think we can find a lot of neat stuff
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that's natural for that $350 range.
Right. So basically you can use something that's actually reusable. I mean,
yes.
The fresh fruits, for example, because you're not actually wasting any money because you're using things that you could obviously eat and consume.
Yes.
And so it's sort of just arranging it and making it look good in your kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you absolutely can. And I do. I use the nuts from then on. I've used pineapples before. I do the pomegranates, although those are a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Look around. You can use different kind of containers.
Mm-hmm.
The toll boxes are gorgeous. Any kind of canister, basket, platter, all those can be used to display the materials that we talked about earlier. In fact, I even go out and break branches off of trees, and I'll put them in a huge vase with the pebbles on the bottom and then decorate those with ornaments, and that's not expensive at all.
And this is something also you can do with your family, with your kids, because it's something that they will enjoy because they'll be part of their, being involved in decorating, so to speak. It's something that you can do for fun, and it's a sense of belonging, sense of ownership from the kids.
You bet. That's a fantastic idea. Do you want to go to a little bit more? little bit more money on this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, maybe up to maybe $750 to $1,000 or so.
Okay. This is the fun part for me. I have to be careful and not talk so fast because I love this. This is just so much fun, and I'm just picturing your you know, listeners being able to go out and find things, and so I hope I'm helping. But when you get a little bit more money, you can perhaps splurge on things like the ribbon that's got the French wire in it that can be shaped. A lot of businesses now are selling the clear hurricanes in various sizes that can be filled with that's the grapevine on the bottom and then a combination of nuts and candles inside. There's also Johnny seasonal slip covers that you can get for chairs, especially if you've got an eat-in kitchen,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that give a tremendous amount of color to perhaps just a wooden chair or something that needs color to it.
Right.
And then I have a lot of seasonal platters that instead of being stacked and hidden somewhere, I use picture easels, and I have those displayed up against the wall on my countertops.
Right, right.
And then, excuse me, you're familiar with the chargers,
mm-hmm,
and
yes.
those, any of those can be used. They're available red, green, gold, and silver, and those are quite lovely to add a little bit of sparkle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there's a combination also of things that you can do with one and two. That is, you know, if you have X amount of dollars to spend, and
mm-hmm.
you can actually buy candles on your own and do the glitter yourself. And, again, this is getting a family project, you know, being involved depending on how old your children are, that they will enjoy doing it with you in getting into the holiday spirit of doing things.
Yes, very much so. In fact, I usually will do at least two trees because my son said, Mom, I'm tired of having that perfect tree. I want one with the dough ornaments.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
listen to them, and yes, let them be a part of it. And if you need to have one perfect, beautiful tree, do it. But then, yes, incorporate their ideas
mm-hmm.
as far as doing other little more low-key items. And then if you wanted to go up from there, there are the most beautiful hand-blown glass ornaments. There are glass beading.
Mm-hmm.
You could have multiple trees. You could have the luminaries outside, the fresh garland, and any of the paper whites that give off a fresh smell, especially in the kitchen, are quite lovely. And then I've had clients that have actually paid other people to wrap their gifts so that they're all – I know, isn't that funny? So that they're all wrapped in the same paper, and then they have
uh-huh.
a very ornate ribbon on them, and that becomes a decorative element in itself.
Right.
It's not just presents, you know, stuffed under
right,
the tree.
Right, right.
There are seasonal drapery panels that you can purchase,
mm-hmm.
and also you can decorate your light fixtures with any of the materials that we had previously talked about, simply clustering those and hanging them from the light fixtures. And then my final idea
mm-hmm.
in the way of the decorative items would be layers of table linens if you were to spend a little bit more money, would be
okay.
to not only do the plain table covering, but then the placemats, napkins, and build from there anytime you have layers.
And these are the things that they don't necessarily have to go to expensive, department stores to get it, because they could get it from relatively, you know, inexpensive places, right?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And the more work that you do yourself, even if you don't think that you're a very crafty person, yes, the
yeah.
more money that you're going to save. Yeah, absolutely. These are not terribly expensive items. No. Mm-mm.
One thing I've learned a long time ago is that one of my moms had mentioned to me about when, this is, of course, with her immediate, you know, child, that is, you know, so she had done something that's very special, that to make an ornament with the child, because they have, you know, they're able to buy things, but what they do is that once a year they always do an ornament themselves, a special personal ornament for the child, and for each year, and it goes on the tree, so that for the 18 years you have this, you know, 18 different ornaments. I think it's something, a wonderful keepsake for years to come.
Oh, that's a fantastic idea. Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much.
that's something, you know, which is kind of unique. And that's something that you know, it's a combination of you buying and doing something, because, mm-hmm. of course, you may have to buy some things, mm-hmm. but then you may picking up a special cone, a pine cone, and dressing it up in a different way or something like that, that will qualify for something like that. Any other tips as far as how to kind of let it blend in from the kitchen perspective to the rest of the house, and of course functionality, because you can't really overdo things. That you mentioned something, but you don't want to put everything on the kitchen counter only to have to move everything out of the way here.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Any other last minute thoughts about that?
You're absolutely right. You really have to be careful to not interrupt the flow and the function. But I think I would just suggest that you try and keep it, give it some continuity. If you want to do a monochromatic where everything is the same color, that would be great. If you want to mix it up a little bit, you can too, but give it some continuity between the rooms so that they all flow, mm-hmm. a visual continuity, whether that comes from color or everything being more of a rustic nature or everything being crystal. That would work.
Well, wonderful. How can someone get more information about your services?
I would love to hear from them or any questions or comments, but you can go to my website. It is www.kellybarnett.com, and that's spelled KelleyBarnett.com.
Okay. Is there any special trend in the kitchen design that we can expect in 2010?
You know, there are a couple of new products on the market. One of them, for anyone that's interested, would be the magnetic induction cooktop, which is fascinating. They're cooking with magnets now.
Oh,
and
wow.
That surface stays cold, so you don't have to worry about little fingers being burned. And if an item or a pot is taken off, removed mm-hmm. from that cooktop, it turns off. It's just fascinating. That's one of the newest. But we're still into the sleek, uncluttered design with not a lot of upper cabinets, the multi-cook workstations where you will have multiple prep areas, multiple cleanup areas, and this goes back to what a comment that you had made earlier about multi-generational, that people are staying in their homes longer, they're caring for their parents, and they're coming to live with them, and so that would bring up our other new trend, but this one's going to be around for a long time, and that's what we call universal design or aging in place, where you prepare for and plan for older cooks in the
mm-hmm,
kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
The cabinet levels need to be uniform. You plan for changes in eyesight with the selections you make. The countertops are higher. The storage is lower. That's
mm-hmm.
all comes under the wonderful umbrella of universal design and aging in place. Those would be trends I would want to mention.
I see. Okay. Well, great. We're coming close to the end of the show. And for all guests I have on this show, do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with all of our listeners this morning?
You know, I do. And I thought that perhaps I could tell it in the form of a very brief story. So let me start. On a recent plane ride to a board meeting, I was happy to have the front row seat until the flight attendant asked a volunteer to give up their seat for a physically disabled lady.
Mm-hmm.
And I briefly thought, oh, I just got settled in, but
mm-hmm.
I jumped to my feet and I vacated my spot. I took the only other seat that was left, and it was early in the morning, and I really wanted to read my Bible, as is my daily habit in the morning, but I just wasn't at peace, and so I started up a conversation with a perfect stranger seated next to me, and Johnny, in a matter of minutes, I learned that this precious woman had suffered the deaths of not one but two of her sons.
Oh, wow.
One to suicide and one in a car accident, and her mm-hmm. remaining son, who was probably about 25,
mm-hmm.
Was a special needs young man who was seated next to his mama.
Mm-hmm.
She was gentle, she was patient with him, and I was so impressed. But I sat there the remainder of the flight listening to her, trying to encourage her, and of course I was praying for her, and I thought, oh my goodness, she blessed me today. And now, then I knew why I couldn't just close myself off in my little world and read my Bible. I mean, I was actually given an opportunity to live out its principles. Mm-hmm. So my conclusion was that there is tremendous joy in being a blessing to others.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very much so. Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. I mean, that's a beautiful story.
I love these stories. These are true stories.
it's beautiful.
Those make the absolutely best ones. Thank you for asking.
Oh, you're welcome. Kelly, thank you for the great recipe for living, the wonderful story, and spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning. Please join me next Tuesday morning as we continue with our theme, Home for the Holidays, the Celebration of the Heart with a Gift from the Soul. My guests will be my progressive and spiritual moms, Elsa Mae Stevens from Hammond, Louisiana, my Cajun mom, Ginger White from Plaquemine, Louisiana, and my German mom, Diane Heise from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We will be having an early Thanksgiving show special focusing on many things and blessings that we are all thankful for this year. For additional information about this show, future shows, and for my weekly recipes for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter at Twitter/FMMK Talk Radio. And by the way, thank you for listening. Have a great week. And Kelly, thank you again, and have a wonderful day.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.